concepts of our economic system and the what and how of money will be the focus of this program and contains segments with adult content. Please tune your radio accordingly.
Money. Noun. Money is anything that is generally used as payment for goods and services. We all love and need money. Where does money come from? What exactly is money? By far, most of the money in the world is not the kind of money we carry around in our pockets. The vast majority of the money in the world only exists as numbers in banks' computers. Almost all money in the world is created by banks when they make loans. Money is actually consumer debt in disguise.
Narcissist on the left and fundamentalist on the right and madmen in the middle, but not a savior in sight. I was overwhelmed by the lies, the danger, and the doom. The king had no clothes, there was an elephant in the room. I saw coddled kids, indulged and obese, relating to the world through computer screens, oblivious to the demise of this fragile planet. How the economy was killing it, and they were just trying to expand it. I learned the love of money had a nominal effect upon who they were and how they would act. No, it was the worship of money that was sinking their ship, made them soft and self-centered, spiritually unfit.
What is wealth? I mean, we're all interested in it, so where does it come from and what is it? Wealth has two basic sources, that's aside from its culturally defined dimensions. First, there's the natural resources of the planet, of the environment. That's the great basic source of wealth, the land. The fruits of the land and the forests, the subterranean resources, the mineral deposits and other rich deposits, the resources from the sea, salt, fish, kelp, the sun's energy. These are all sources, if harnessed and gathered, that become wealth. The second source is human labor. There's really no natural resource that automatically leaps into our mouths, certainly none that automatically leaps into our wallets or pockets. Even food gathering in a very lush, fertile community requires labor, the labor of gathering. Labor, then, is the vital other ingredient. And labor adds use value to resources, making them accessible, making them consumable, and therefore making them marketable. Labor also adds market value. It transforms, for instance, what transforms a useless tree? And a tree is useless. I mean, a tree can be precious, it's beautiful, it's part of our survival, our health, environment. But for the market, it's useless. Unless it's on a property that enhances the value of the property. Someone sells you this and says, look, you got this beautiful oak tree here too, you know? We added $1,000 to the houses for that tree. But generally, what transforms a useless tree into a commodity you can sell is the labor that goes into harvesting it. transporting it into lumber. Now, lumber itself is another marketable commodity, of course, that's a source of profit. And then that transforming that lumber into furniture, all the labor that goes into that, and all the labor that goes into advertising and selling it and transporting it and bringing it to your house. What do you want, lady? And putting it down. All of that makes this, is what gives value to that tree. It's the labor. In food gathering and hunting, and even early horticultural societies, there was not much opportunity to accumulate wealth. I mean, if you were Native American Indian, you might want to own 2-3 horses, you might even have pride, but you couldn't own 200, you couldn't take care of them all. You wouldn't have any reason for that.
And what is the fundamental mechanism that drives the profit system besides self-interest? What is it exactly that maintains that competitive edge at its core? Is it high efficiency and sustainability? No, that isn't part of their design. Nothing produced in our profit-based society is even remotely sustainable or efficient. If it was, there wouldn't be a multi-million dollar a year service industry for automobiles, nor would the average lifespan for most electronics be less than 3 months before they're obsolete. Is it abundance? Absolutely not. Abundance, as based on the laws of supply and demand, is actually a negative thing. If a diamond company finds 10 times the usual amount of diamonds during their mining, it means the supply of diamonds has increased, which means the cost and profit per diamond drops. The fact is, efficiency, sustainability, and abundance are enemies of profit. To put it into a word, it is the mechanism of scarcity that increases profits.
Get in, get out, without the dark, all you can do is save yourself, leave the rest behind, yeah. Get in, get out, without the dark, all you can do is save yourself, leave the rest behind.
It's not true that coke or heroin is the worst addiction in America, or cigarettes, or alcohol. The worst addiction, the most crippling, the most damaging addiction is wealth. These people are just out of control. They just want more and more and more. And they're not unlike the ruling classes of all history. If the ruling classes of all history have ever wanted anything, there's only one thing they've ever wanted, and that's everything. They want all the lands, all the choice crops, all the herds, all the rich mineral deposits. They want control of all the labor, all the markets. They want all the civilities and comforts and luxuries of civil society while paying none of the costs. They want everything. And then when they got everything, they want still more. They want gold chalices to drink out of. They want $1,000 bills to light their cigars. They want, of course, the ruling class has learned since the days of the robber baron, they're not as crass and crude about it. But they are just as ruthless in their dedication to this accumulation.
What is scarcity? Based on keeping products valuable, slowing up production on oil raises the price. Maintaining scarcity of diamonds keeps the price high. They burn diamonds at the Kimberley Diamond Mine and made of carbon that keeps the price up.
So then, what does it mean for society when scarcity, either produced naturally or through manipulation, is a beneficial condition for industry? It means that sustainability and abundance will never ever occur in a profit system, for it simply goes against the very nature of the structure. Therefore, it is impossible to have a world without war or poverty. It is impossible to continually advance technology to its most efficient and productive states. And, most dramatically, it is impossible to expect human beings to behave in truly ethical or decent ways.
Sees his children jumping off the stations one by one. His woman and his best friend in bed and having fun. Oh, it's calling down the corridor on
Society today is composed of a series of institutions. From political institutions, legal institutions, religious institutions, to institutions of social class, familial values, and occupational specialization, it is obvious the profound influence these traditionalized structures have in shaping our understandings and perspectives. Yet, of all the social institutions we are born into, directed by, and conditioned upon, there seems to be no system as taken for granted and misunderstood as the monetary system. Taking on nearly religious proportions, the established monetary institution exists as one of the most unquestioned forms of faith there is. How money is created, the policies by which it is governed, and how it truly affects society are unregistered interests of the great majority of the population. In a world where 1% of the population owns 40% of the planet's wealth, in a world where 34,000 children die every single day from poverty and preventable diseases, and where 50% of the world's population lives on less than $2 a day, one thing is clear: something is very wrong. And whether we are aware of it or not, the lifeblood of all of our established institutions, and thus society itself, is money. Therefore, understanding this institution of monetary policy is critical to understanding why our lives are the way they are. Unfortunately, economics is often viewed with confusion and boredom. Endless streams of financial jargon coupled with intimidating mathematics quickly deters people from attempts at understanding it. However, the fact is, the complexity associated with the financial system is a mere mask, designed to conceal one of the most socially paralyzing structures humanity has ever endured.
I'm gonna buy you like stock and barrel. I'm gonna buy you out, and there is little doubt that I'm gonna make a lot of money. Then I'm gonna get the hell out. Well, the first rule of the market is don't panic, and the second rule is you should panic first. 'Cause if everybody panics at the same time, then the whole damn stock exchange is gonna burst. This is the game of the market, where everybody's maximizing profit. Money changes hands by the dictates of demand. Oh, it's stupid, yes, but nobody can stop it. Well, the price of stocks is rising, it's a record. We can dance and drink martinis on the porch and pretend our profits do not come from sweatshops and that those voluntary standards are enforced. You know that people everywhere, they want our products. If they're sick and poor, we'll make them rich and well. But of course, you know, this doesn't always work out. And if those stupid schmucks rebel, we'll give them hell. This is the game of the market, where everybody's maximizing profit. Money changes hands by the dictates of demand. Well, it's stupid, yes, but nobody can stop it. Well, now how can you hold me to commitment? I must be flexible and ready for a surprise. I'm really sorry that your job's been terminated, but the market told us that we must downsize. Does it sound like we've given up our power to an entity that we can't even see? Well, this is not the first time that that's happened. You can learn about the others on TV. This is the game of the market, where everybody's maximizing profit. Money changes hands by the dictates of demand. Oh, it's stupid, yes, but no. Socialism. It's nice in theory, but it really doesn't work. Yes, it would be nice if everyone were equal, but I'd have to give up my three houses in New York. This is the game of the market, where everybody's maximizing profit. Money changes hands by the dictates of demand. Oh, it's stupid, yes, but no. Market where everybody's maximizing profit. Money changes hands by the dictates of demand. Well, it's stupid, yes, but no.
I was taught when I was in school that money is a medium of exchange. It's a way we can deal in exchange goods and services. And that has a really nice, neutral-sounding ring to it. Money is a medium of exchange. Money can be used for good or bad. You can use money to build a hospital or to bribe an official. You can use money to enhance with scholarships or corrupt or kill or whatever. Actually, on further reflection, I decided that money is not a neutral thing. Money is not an instrument for good or bad. Money itself, by its very nature, historically in a class society, becomes a means of abstracting, mobilizing, and accumulating wealth. Otherwise, they wouldn't have invented it. They wouldn't put so much stock in it. They wouldn't be going after it so much. In the olden days, when wealth consisted principally of land, crops, herds, furs, silver plates, gold cups, jewelry, and such, you could accumulate just so much, and you can do just so much with it. But abstracted from material wealth, money becomes a very flexible, very powerful, very mobile tool for accumulation. In a world of rich and poor, there's nothing neutral about money. It's the same with technology. When they say technology is just a neutral instrument, you could use it for good, you could use it for bad. That's not true. Technology is developed within the framework of a social structure. Technology is developed by those who own and control technology, who have a lot of money. And they develop technologies of surveillance, they develop technologies of war, they develop technologies of self-promotion, of marketing. That's what they use technology for the most part.
When the government borrows money from the Fed, or when a person borrows money from a bank, it almost always has to be paid back with accrued interest. In other words, almost every single dollar that exists must be eventually returned to a bank with interest paid as well. But if all money is borrowed from the central bank and is expanded by commercial banks through loans, only what would be referred to as the principal is being created in the money supply. So then, where is the money to cover all of the interest that is charged? Nowhere. It doesn't exist. The ramifications of this are staggering, for the amount of money owed back to the banks will always exceed the amount of money that is available in circulation. This is why inflation is a constant in the economy, for new money is always needed to help cover the perpetual deficit built into the system, caused by the need to pay the interest. What this also means is that mathematically, defaults and bankruptcy are literally built into the system, and there will always be poor pockets of society that get the short end of the stick. An analogy would be a game of musical chairs, for once the music stops, somebody is left out to dry. and that's the point. It invariably transfers true wealth from the individual to the banks. For if you are unable to pay for your mortgage, they will take your property. This is particularly enraging when you realize that not only is such a default inevitable due to the fractional reserve practice, but also because of the fact that the money that the bank loaned to you didn't even legally exist in the first place. In 1969, there was a Minnesota court case involving a man named Jerome Daly, who was challenging the foreclosure of his home by the bank which provided the loan to purchase it. His argument was that the mortgage contract required both parties, being he and the bank, each put up a legitimate form of property for the exchange. In legal language, this is called consideration. Mr. Daly explained that the money was, in fact, not the property of the bank, for it was created out of nothing as soon as the loan agreement was signed. Remember what modern money mechanics stated about loans? What they do when they make loans is to accept promissory notes in exchange for credits. Reserves are unchanged by the loan transactions, but deposit credits constitute new additions to the total deposits of the banking system. In other words, the money doesn't come out of their existing assets. The bank is simply inventing it, putting up nothing of its own, except for a theoretical liability on paper. As the court case progressed, the bank's president, Mr. Morgan, took the stand, and in the judge's personal memorandum, he recalled that the plaintiff, bank's president, admitted that, in combination with the Federal Reserve Bank, did create the money and credit upon its books by bookkeeping entry. The money and credit first came into existence when they created it. Mr. Morgan admitted that no United States law or statute existed which gave him the right to do this. A lawful consideration must exist and be tendered to support the note. The jury found that there was no lawful consideration, and I agree. He also poetically added, "Only God can create something of value out of nothing." And upon this revelation, the court rejected the bank's claim for foreclosure, and Daly kept his home. The implications of this court decision are immense. For every time you borrow money from a bank, whether it is a mortgage loan or a credit card charge, the money given to you is not only counterfeit, it is an illegitimate form of consideration, and hence voids the contract to repay, for the bank never had the money as property to begin with. Unfortunately, such legal realizations are suppressed and ignored, and the game of perpetual wealth transfer and perpetual debt continues. And this brings us to the ultimate question. Why?
What is the Matrix? Control. The Matrix, built to keep us under control in order to change a human being.
No. I don't believe it. It's not possible.
I didn't say it would be easy, Neo. I just said it would be the truth.
To chase and to walk home via Wells Fargo Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa Morgan Stanley too. In debt we trust, so pay we must, we
During the American Civil War, President Lincoln bypassed the high-interest loans offered by the European banks and decided to do what the Founding Fathers advocated, which was to create an independent and inherently debt-free currency. It was called the greenback. Shortly after this measure was taken, an internal document circulated between private British and American banking interests stated, "Slavery is but the owning of labor and carries with it the care of laborers, while the European plan is that capital shall control labor by controlling wages. This can be done by controlling the money. It will not do to allow the greenback." as we cannot control that. The fractional reserve policy perpetrated by the Federal Reserve, which has spread in practice to the great majority of banks in the world, is, in fact, a system of modern slavery. Think about it. Money is created out of debt. And what do people do when they are in debt? They submit to employment to pay it off. But if money can only be created out of loans, how can society ever be debt-free? It can't. And that's the point. And it is the fear of losing assets coupled with the struggle to keep up with the perpetual debt and inflation inherent in the system, compounded by the inescapable scarcity within the money supply itself, created by the interest that can never be repaid, that keeps the wage slave in line, running on the hamster wheel with millions of others, in effect powering an empire that truly benefits only the elite at the top of the pyramid. For, at the end of the day, who are you really working for? The banks. Money is created in a bank and invariably ends up in a bank. They are the true masters, along with the corporations and governments they support. Physical slavery requires people to be housed and fed. Economic slavery requires people to feed and house themselves. It is one of the most ingenious scams for social manipulation ever created, and at its core, it is an invisible war against the population. Debt is the weapon used to conquer and enslave societies, and interest is its prime ammunition. And as the majority walks around oblivious to this reality, the banks, in collusion with governments and corporations, continue to perfect and expand their tactics of economic warfare, spawning new bases, such as the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, while also inventing a new type of soldier, the birth of the economic hitman.
The market will self-regulate, but elite business schemes would still just be dreams without the arms of the state. If you wanna know what they mean when they say we're gonna open up your markets for our free trade, just ask the ghosts of all those who've been killed for refusing to bow down before the dollar bill. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely will. Monsanto, Merck, or Union Carbide, they go by so many names. But for the land and the people destroyed by their greed, the story is always the same. McDonald's requires McDonnell Douglas, United Fruit needed U.S. Marines. The freedom of their market, supported by fascist regimes. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded funded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely is so thick as they tell us we're free, and we've gotta cut right through their lies. It's not freedom to choose our own destinies, it's freedom to choose our demise. You can die for their money, you can die by their guns, they'll let you choose your own fate. If you get in the way of their profit, you can be sure you'll be burned at the stake. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely will.
They opened fire on the people, and these were true.
People say, "Wow, I'm gonna share the shoes you."
This is CBC Radio.
The massacre of 145.
We don't need no great hand coming down from the sky, or your soldiers in olive drab marching on by. To discipline, regulate, liberalize, legislate, we decline. Without you we were just doing fine. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely will.
Red Dog took a fall, reacting to their sector's downbeat corporate news. Investors also were worried about the strength of the economy.
Economic hitmen really have been the ones responsible for creating this first truly global empire. And we work many different ways. But perhaps the most common is that we will identify a country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations. But the money never actually goes to the country. Instead, it goes to our big corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, power plants, industrial parks, ports, things that benefit a few rich people in that country, in addition to our corporations, but really don't help the majority of the people at all. However, those people, the whole country is left holding a huge debt. It's such a big debt they can't repay it, and that's part of the plan, that they can't repay it. And so at some point, we economic hitmen go back to them and say, listen, you lost a lot of money, can't pay your debts, so sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies. Allow us to build a military base in your country, or send troops in support of ours to someplace in the world like Iraq, or vote with us on the next UN vote, to have their electric utility company privatized and their water and sewage system privatized and sold to U.S. corporations or other multinational corporations. So there was that whole mushrooming thing, and it's so typical of the way the IMF and the World Bank work, that you put a country in debt, it's such a big debt it can't pay it, and then you offer to refinance that debt and pay even more interest. And you demand this quid pro quo, which you call a conditionality or good governance, which means basically that they've got to sell off their resources, including many of their social services, their utility companies, their school systems sometimes, their penal systems, their insurance systems, to foreign corporations. So it's a double, triple, quadruple whammy.
Dominant interest in one country, the dominant interest, not the American people, but the dominant interest in one country, go out and they expropriate the land, the labor, the natural resources, the markets, and the capital of another country. Sometimes in collusion with some of the dominant interests in that country, too. So the unit of analysis is not necessarily the nation. It's the class interest in the respective countries. Empire involves plunder, tribute, as I said, natural resources, markets. It involves expropriating the land, the crops, the cheap labor, or the slave labor, as in ancient Rome. Empires are enormously profitable, mostly for the ruling class of the imperial country. Empires are also enormously costly for the common populace, especially, of course, of the targeted nation, the conquered nation, but also the common people of the imperial country also pay a price. The empire feeds off of the republic's resources. The people pay the taxes and do without essentials, so that the patricians can pursue their far-off plunder. The center is bled so that the perimeter can be ever expanded and expanded and expanded. And if you want to know how the bleeding goes, just look around. I mean, I travel all over this country. I pick up the local papers. It almost seems like the same story again. The city council facing budget crisis, state assembly voting cuts on services, blah, 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 blah. We gotta do that. We gotta close those public libraries. We gotta do that sort of thing. We gotta cut library hours and close public hospitals, as I said, and leave bridges under-repaired and take your chances when your car goes down into the river and all that stuff. That kind of thing's gotta happen, because we really need that money for conquest. And that's where it's going. It's enormous. I mean, it's an enormous increase in military spending, over $500 billion every year. That, depending on how you want to calculate it, it's up to $700 billion if you want to count interest payments and veterans' expenses and so forth and so on. It's enormous. Conservation programs are being cut. Medicare is under siege. Programs for disabled children are being cut.
I've been down this road before. Is there any truth to that scene?
Now, America is inclined toward fascism. it has a propensity by its dominant philosophy and religion to uphold the fascist point of view. American industry is essentially a fascist institution. If you don't understand that, the minute you punch that time clock, you walk into a dictatorship.
We're given notions about the respectability of work, and I really look at it as being paid slavery.
They're brought up to believe that you shall earn your living by the sweat of your brow. That holds people back, freeing people from drudgery, repetitive jobs which make them ignorant. You rob them. In our society, that is a resource-based economy, machines free people. You see, we can't imagine that because we've never known that kind of world.
If we look back at history, we see a very clear pattern of machine automation slowly replacing human labor. From the disappearance of the elevator man to the near full automation of an automobile production plant, the fact is, as technology grows, the need for humans in the workforce will continually be diminished. This creates a serious clash, which proves the falseness of the monetary-based labor system. For human employment is in direct competition with technological development. Therefore, given the fundamental priority of profit by industry, people through time will be continually laid off and replaced by machine.
When industry takes on a machine, instead of shortening the workday, they downsize. You lose your job. So you have a right to fear machines.
In a high-technology, resource-based economy, it is conservative to say that about 90% of all current occupations could be phased out by machines, freeing humans to live their life without servitude, for this is the point of technology itself. And through time, with nanotechnology and other highly advanced forms of science, it is not far-fetched to see how even complex medical procedures could be performed by machines as well, and based on the pattern, with much higher success rates than humans get today. The path is clear, but our monetary-based structure, which requires labor for income, blocks this progress, for humans need jobs in order to survive. The bottom line is that this system must go, or we will never be free, and technology will be constantly paralyzed.
We have machines that clean out sewers. It frees a human being from doing that. So look at machines as extensions of human performance.
Furthermore, many occupations today will have simply no basis to exist in a resource-based economy, such as anything associated with the management of money, advertising, along with the legal system itself. For without money, a great majority of the crimes that are committed today would never occur. Virtually all forms of crime are a consequence of the monetary system, either directly or by neuroses inflicted through financial deprivation. Therefore, laws themselves could eventually become extinct.
Instead of putting up a sign, drive carefully, slippery when wet, put abrasive in the highway so it's not slippery when wet. And if a person gets in a car, they're drunk, and the car oscillates a great deal, there's a little pendulum that swings up and back, and that'll pull the car over to the side. Not a law. Solution. Put sonar and radar in automobiles so they can't hit one another. Man-made laws are attempts to deal with occurring problems, and not knowing how to solve them, they make a law.
In the United States, the most privatized, capitalist country on the planet, it should come as no surprise that it also has the largest prison population in the world, growing every year. Statistically, most of these people are uneducated and come from poor, deprived societies. And, contrary to propaganda, it is this environmental conditioning which lures them into criminal and violent behavior. However, society looks the other way in regard to this point. The legal and prison systems are just more examples of how our society avoids examining the root causes of behavior. Billions are spent each year on prisons and police, while only a fraction is spent on programs for poverty, which is one of the most fundamental variables responsible for crime to begin with. And as long as we have an economic system which prefers and in fact creates scarcity and deprivation, crime will never go away.
I don't know what it is to be free, and I cry when you say that you can't free me. I just can't.
The social values of our society, which has manifested in perpetual warfare, corruption, oppressive laws, social stratification, irrelevant superstitions, environmental destruction, and a despotic, socially indifferent, profit-oriented ruling class, is fundamentally the result of a collective ignorance of two of the most basic insights humans can have about reality: the emergent and symbiotic aspects of natural law. The emergent nature of reality is that all systems, whether it is knowledge, society, technology, philosophy, or any other creation, will, when uninhibited, undergo fluid, perpetual change. What we consider commonplace today, such as modern communication and transportation, would have been unimaginable in ancient times. Likewise, the future will contain technologies, realizations, and social structures that we cannot even fathom in the present. We have gone from alchemy to chemistry, from a geocentric universe to a heliocentric, from believing that demons were the cause of illness to modern medicine. This development shows no sign of ending, and it is this awareness that aligns us and leads us on a continuous path to growth and progress. Static, empirical knowledge does not exist. Rather, it is the insight of the emergence of all systems we must recognize. This means we must be open to new information at all times, even if it threatens our current belief system and hence identities. Sadly, society today has failed to recognize this, and the established institutions continue to paralyze growth by preserving outdated social structures. Simultaneously, the population suffers from a fear of change, for their conditioning assumes a static identity, and challenging one's belief system usually results in insult and apprehension, for being wrong is erroneously associated with failure, when, in fact, to be proven wrong should be celebrated, for it is elevating someone to a new level of understanding, furthering awareness. The fact is, there is no such thing as a smart human being, for it is merely a matter of time before their ideas are updated, changed, or eradicated. And this tendency to blindly hold on to a belief system, sheltering it from new, possibly transforming information, is nothing less than a form of intellectual materialism. The monetary system perpetuates this materialism not only by its self-preserving structures, but also through the countless number of people who have been conditioned into blindly and thoughtlessly upholding these structures, therefore becoming self-appointed guardians of the status quo. Sheep, which no longer need a sheepdog to control them, for they control each other by ostracizing those who step out of the norm. This tendency to resist change and uphold existing institutions for the sake of identity, comfort, power, and profit is completely unsustainable and will only produce further imbalance, fragmentation, distortion, and invariably, destruction. It's time to change. From hunters and gatherers, to the agricultural revolution, to the industrial revolution, the pattern is clear. It is time for a new social system which reflects the understandings we have today. The monetary system is a product of a period of time where scarcity was a reality. Now, with the age of technology, it is no longer relevant to society. Gone with the aberrant behavior it manifests. Likewise, dominant worldviews, such as theistic religion, operate with the same social irrelevancy. Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, and all of the others exist as barriers to personal and social growth. For each group perpetuates a closed worldview. And this finite understanding that they acknowledge is simply not possible in an emergent universe. Yet, religion has succeeded in shutting down the awareness of this emergence by instilling the psychological distortion of faith upon its followers, where logic and new information is rejected in favor of traditionalized, outdated beliefs.
The major difference between a resource-based economy and a monetary system is that a resource-based economy is really concerned with people and their well-being, where a monetary system has become so distorted that the concerns of the people are really secondary, if they're there at all. The products that are turned out are for how much money you can get. If there is a problem in society and you can't earn money from solving that problem, then it won't be done. The resource-based economy is really not close to anything that's been tried. And with all our technology today, we can create abundance. It could be used to improve everyone's lifestyle. Abundance all over the world if we use our technology wisely and maintain the environment.
It's a very different system, and it's very hard to talk about because the public is not that well enough informed as to the state of technology.
Mr. Economist, don't preach to me about trickle-down theory. It's a fallacy, propagated callously. So we believe the deceit and keep imagination living in poverty. The national lottery is a tax on stupidity. Prosperity doesn't trickle down to most folks because the rising tide lifts the biggest boats and the sea's getting kind of rocky lately. Still, the crest don't exist without the wave underneath it. One, own the air that the rest of us breathe in. Tribute survived from colonial days. Masters demand tax from ungrateful slaves. Now it's a PR game. Still works the same cash rules with the iron fist in the background. The mob knows how to lay a smack down to crush disobedience from anyone in town. And send in the goons if anyone gets out of line. That's how protection rackets worked since the dawn of time. Now the state takes the same old line. Governments are just well-armed gangsters with delusions of grandeur, with law on their side as they're kicking in front doors to settle scores. Wherever natives get restless and rise up to threaten vital business interests, the death toll rises from the latest war. Yeah, we could argue all night about what it's really for. Just ask any private in the army. The only thing that trickles down is everyday brutality. I bring righteous indignation to bling bling fuckwits. Don't need diamonds to make you shake your hips. Money don't exist, it's just figures in columns, as elusive as the cash in my bank manager's wallet. It's so common to be poor in a rich country. A $1 trillion economy is comfortable with your poverty. The market understands its wish is your command. That's called the law of supply and demand. Whenever there is profit, there is loss. Like when trade is free, there's still a cost. Wherever there is privilege and luxury, there's abject poverty coexisting peacefully, but not for long. Don't want to live at the periphery of someone else's nightmare. I'm not racing for wealth and property, just trying to live life on that line between poverty and greed. The bad news is we're not free, we're cheap. Bought off with dreams of a Beamer or a Jeep. At the head table, begging for scraps, praying that they'll lapse and give you half a chance. And that's begging your master to set you free, as if benevolent tyranny would make poverty history. Let's ask the superstar singers, thank God we got them to save us, or we'd really be fucked. GNP is up, so how come I'm not lot richer. I don't understand economics, so what can you say? Most of us got nothing for a rainy day. Your pension is not safe for the stock market. I want my contribution back, but they spent it. Don't understand economics, but I understand this. The free market is free to those who can afford it, and very expensive to those that can't. Very, 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 very expensive. But you'll know me, I just put my lack of money where my mouth is. So if you wanna come and take a ride with me, I really hope you got the money for a taxi. Oh, why do I live this way? Hey, that'll be the lack of money. Never drank Cristal or been to China Whites, but I might cane a cheap bottle of vodka on a Friday night if anyone would like to join me. See you on College Green. That's in the hilly city in the divided kingdom. A system of feudalism means we live in serfdom. Kings got closed circuit vision to survey the fiefdom. Medieval economics, but surveillance is modern. Land hasn't been common since the Enclosures Act of 1750. The basis for a privileged economy based on the sanctity of private property. Here's good news for the many that don't hear the knock of opportunity. We can't eat money, so it will end the ignorant arrogance of the North Atlantic. Fashionable antics left in our wake. And if cod stocks are low, let the meat hake. So, Mr. Economist, don't preach to me. I got personal debt right up to the knees for all the things I had to buy, like education and beliefs and aspirational magazines. Now I'm counting down the days till it's paid or I die. Let's see what comes first. There's nobody in the sky to pay for the hearse. We're not free, we're cheap. Bought off with the sedative to put us to sleep. Why not just put on a grass skirt and have done with it? If you're a native, you want money, then dance for it. Notwithstanding the standard neoliberal rhetoric, the only thing that trickles down this far is bullshit. Nations go cap in hand to the World Bank, like me at my local branch, annoying the staff, giving it, mate, you're having a laugh, I'll pay you back, I just need one more extension on my overdraft. We wear debt round our necks like a millstone, the debt of forefathers paid by daughters and sons who dream of breaking with tradition and being the first sane generation to make a free space for living. These fantasies are beautiful, that's why we cling to them. Money can buy license, but it can't buy freedom. Do you believe them? Millionaire rappers who came just to prove you can be rich and still be a slave, because who pays the piper calls the tune. Who pays the piper calls the tune. There's a lot of mental slaves in recording rooms, because who pays the piper calls the tune. And I hate work, so everyone thinks I'm lazy, but I'm thoughtful and patient. I think constantly, so time's never wasted. In case you didn't know it, I'm not rich, but I've never known real hardship, never had much money, but I'm one of the lucky ones. In the natal lottery, born unburdened by sour defeat, change doesn't trickle down to us, it rises up like dust, so stamp your feet. Change doesn't trickle down to us, it rises up like dust, so stamp your feet. Change doesn't trickle down to us, it rises up like dust, so stamp your feet. Change doesn't trickle down to us, it rises up like dust, so everybody in the house stamp your feet, yo. Don't let money change ya, da 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 dee da. Da 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 dee da, da 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 dee da. Don't let money change you, da 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 dee da, da 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 dee da, da 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 dee da. Don't let lack of money change you, da 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 dee da, da 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 dee da, da 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 dee da. Don't let money change you. Don't let money change you. Don't let money change you. Thank you. Thank you very much.